south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started. And now just a little update on my upcoming Latin American seminar in January 2014. Now, if you remember, I only have room for 24 people at the seminar, and as of right now, as I record this 5 weeks before showtime, I've got 21 people signed up already. That means, of course, I have 3 spots left. And by the way, I've got 6 or 7 people emailing me here and there saying they're gonna come, but they're just juggling their schedules, their money, and their dog sitters and stuff. But you know, you're not in until you're in. I know that sounds like something Yogi Berra would say, but it's true. Anyway, if you want in on one of those last 3 spots, just go to the expatwisdom.com website, and on the upper left, you'll see a link called the Latin American Seminar. Just click on that and get the full details. Oh, and by the way, this time again, we'll have some repeat offenders. That means, of course, people who've attended my seminar before and want a double dose of it, so they're coming back. And so far, that's happened at every single one of my seminars. Repeat offenders. And you know, there's nothing strange about that. These are people who are really serious about moving down here eventually, and they want to get all the head start they can. So, like I said, 5 weeks to go and 3 spots left. So get to that Expat Wisdom website and sign up as soon as you can. And yeah, you heard me say that people are trying to line up their schedules, their money, and their dog sitters. Well, believe it or not, just today I got another shock when I called my mom up in the States. And she told me my sister was all bummed out because her dog died. And worse yet, it was only like 8 years old. All right, so what's surprising about that? Well, I'll tell you. My mom said that in the last 6 months of this dog's life, and it had cancer, my sister spent about $30,000 on that dog, taking it from this specialist to that specialist and this treatment to that treatment. And I know people who can afford that stuff often do it. But when my mom filled me in on the list of some of the things that dog had undergone treatment-wise, I just thank my lucky stars I don't have to deal with that stuff down here in Latin America. And all the while my mother was talking, I was thinking, thank God there's a huge lag time on heroic treatments to save a dog's life. For example, did you know that in the States they have dog acupuncturists? Yep, my sister's dog had that done. And canine relaxation and physical therapists? I mean, come on, would you be proud to tell a guy or gal on a first date that that was your chosen career? I know it sounds like something out of a comedy sketch, but it's true. Oh, and get this, when my sister took her dog to the holistic canine practitioners, turns out they spent a lot of time and she spent a lot of money. When she discovered, horror of horrors, that the dog's chakras were out of whack. Meanwhile, she proceeded to set the dog up with a few appointments over there to realign the chakras, and she dropped about $800 at that place. And you know, I like dogs as much as the next guy. I've had a few over the years, and they've been nothing but good times and joy, really. But I'm gonna stop now. I really can't talk about this much anymore, because it only makes me think there's something seriously wrong with and very screwed up about a good percentage of first world people and their priorities. On the other side, there's a lot of people like you guys and gals who listen to programs like this. I know you have a feeling, just like I do, that a system like that just can't go on. You know from history that in dozens of ways, what's happening up in the first world little by little is a blow-by-blow repeat of the fall of the Roman Empire. And when it finally does crash and burn, you have a sneaky feeling that that's exactly what it deserves. And why am I being so harsh? Well, because when you're down here in Latin America, you realize that about 70 or 80% of the entire population can't afford $10 for a dental checkup, much less a physical therapist, acupuncturist, or some new age guy screwing around with misaligned chakras. It seems like, in a lot of ways, compared to down here in Latin America, first world people are living on another planet, especially upscale first worlders like my sister, who think nothing of dropping 30 grand on a dog that's about to die. I mean, the lopsidedness and the pure irony of the situation can't escape anyone with half a brain. Which makes me wonder if you can get your chakras realigned under Obamacare. Don't laugh, I'll bet it's mentioned somewhere in that 20,000-page document. Okay, enough said about that. I take that back. I do have to talk a little bit about Obamacare because people are asking me lately, what about Obamacare and living as an expat outside of the U.S.? Do you have to buy that mandated supplementary insurance they're talking about, or pay a fine or a penalty? So I'm going to give you a little bit of a rundown on that. So far, and things are changing all the time with that stupid and utterly confusing Obamacare crap. Turns out, as of now anyway, if you're living outside the U.S., you don't have to purchase health insurance by the end of March 2014, like everyone else is supposed to do up in the States. And if you're up in the States, you get it through what they call the newly established health insurance marketplaces in each state, whatever that is. That means, unlike other citizens in the U.S., you won't be penalized with a fine for not buying that mandatory insurance. So, if you're an American living abroad through the year 2014, you will be exempt from buying health insurance. And, I repeat, exempt from the penalty for not buying it. Now, if you listen to this show and have already picked up my free 100-page PDF healthcare report in Latin America, available from the Expat Wisdom website, at least I think it's still there now, because I only promised to put it up there for free for a short time, and it's been up there a couple of months now. Anyway, if you read that report and you listen to my show, you know that you can get absolutely first-world healthcare down here for 10 or 20% of first-world prices, which means there's no point in having any of that Obamacare crap. But if you're abroad as an expat only part of the year, then you have to call your resident state's healthcare marketplace or check out one of those healthcare.gov websites, and you're going to have to ask them about your individual case and how to go about buying a policy for yourself or your family. What I'm saying is, whatever you do, don't come back to the States without some kind of health insurance coverage, such as traveler's medical coverage or something like that, until your American health insurance kicks in. Because if you don't, not only will you probably get fined, it could be the end of your health or your savings if you have a big medical health problem while uninsured in the U.S. And of course, with your tax filings, you'll prove that you're an expat living in a foreign country and are therefore exempt. But it's not quite as simple as that, since you have to meet the requirements of being a resident in another country, which means normally you have to be outside of the USA for 330 days or more each year. Now, the so-called Affordable Care Act, the ACA, talk about oxymorons, huh? Anyway, it says under certain circumstances, you won't have to make the so-called individual responsibility payment, which basically works out as a limited exemption for expats who come back to the States for short periods of time, generally no more than 3 months. So you will qualify for the exemption to that Unaffordable Care Act under the following circumstances. For example, you qualify for an exemption if you're uninsured for less than 3 months of the year. You also get the exemption if you have such a low income that you're not required to file an income tax form at all with the IRS. Now, there's one thing that 90% of the population in the States doesn't know. They think everyone has to file, but that's wrong. In fact, for the 2014 tax year, a single person can earn up to around $12,000 that year and not file one single IRS form. Nada. Zilch. No April 15 jitters at all. And that's totally legal. And by the way, you know by listening to this program, if you live off the tourist trail in Latin America, on $12,000 a year, you can live a very respectable, solid, middle-class American life, which is equivalent to an upper-middle-class Latin American lifestyle. And that's a lifestyle enjoyed by only about 5 to 7% of all Latin America. Whereas a single person in the States living on $12,000 a year would be shopping at Goodwill, recycling plastic bottles, and eating cat food. But let's get back to expats and Obamacare and the Unaffordable Care Act. Now, remember, I said that you could go back to the USA for up to 3 months without getting health insurance, and you won't get in trouble for non-compliance for the Unaffordable Care Act. And note, you also qualify for that ACA Obamacare exemption if you're outside the U.S. for at least 330 days per calendar year. They call that the physical presence test, which all expats eventually get to understand and know about. It's something that I talk quite a bit about in my seminar. Now remember, that physical presence test was created by the IRS to determine if you qualify for that approximately $95,000 foreign earned income tax exemption, which I also talk quite a bit about at my seminar. Now, qualifying for that foreign earned income tax exemption, that $95,000 more or less gift, the IRS gives us folks who live more than 330 days a year out of the States, meaning we don't have to pay income taxes at all on the first $95,000 of our foreign earned income. as opposed to all other U.S. citizens living up in the states that have to pay income tax on all sources of income within the states and out. But that's a whole other subject. And here we're just trying to stick to Obamacare, the Unaffordable Care Act. So the question is, what if you have to go back to the USA for more than 3 months? Well, you're going to get nailed by the IRS unless you're exempt due to insufficient annual income, which I just mentioned, earning $12,000 a year or less. Or you must, within the first 3 months that you're there, get qualifying health care insurance coverage that kicks in before you're one more day over 3 months in the States. So if you are over 3 months in the States, remember I said that some travel insurance policies will qualify. But these travelers insurance plans must meet some minimum essential coverage terms that are outlined in the Unaffordable Care Act. And if you look it up, you'll see there's a big, boring list, so I won't go into it. But just to say, if you have insomnia, I definitely recommend it as a late-night read. Now get this, to make things even more complicated, when you're an expat arriving in the States and you're going to stay over that 3 month period, that means you'll have to sign up for some kind of insurance program, and there are special rules in each state, depending on where you're going to reside, allowing people like that to sign up with approved insurance exchanges that normally have a closed enrollment period. So you actually could land in your chosen state and find out your insurance options are very limited because some of the insurance company enrollment programs are closed at that time of year. For example, the general public's open enrollment period for health coverage in 2014 closes on March 31st, 2014 and doesn't reopen again till January 1st, 2015. So as an expat, you have to wonder what's going to happen to your insurance situation if you land, for example, on April 2014 during the closed period. You see how utterly screwed up and confusing this is? Now, this is the part I really like. Now, remember, like I said before, there is a low income exemption too. But there are other exemptions. For example, if you're a member of an approved religious sect that rejects medical care on religious grounds, or if you're a member of an Indian tribe, or you happen to be a convict. So if you're up in the States and you want out of that Unaffordable Care Act completely, you don't have to rob a jewelry store. Just buy a horse and buggy, toss your smartphone, practice your these and thous, and go Amish. But better yet, do what so many long-term expats do, or I should say don't do. They just don't go back to the U.S. for more than 35 days a year. Though, believe me, there are other ways around it that are completely legal, though a bit more complicated. And I talk about those at my seminar, too. Okay, let me try to clarify the important parts of this completely screwed up subject. Bottom line, U.S. citizens living in a foreign country are not required to get health insurance coverage under the Unaffordable Care Act. If you're uninsured and living abroad, you don't have to pay the fee that other uninsured U.S. citizens will be forced to pay. And the reason why the Unaffordable Care Act allows us expats to slip through the cracks like that is because U.S. marketplace insurance companies generally do not provide health care coverage for people living outside of the U.S. So in effect, just about the only logical thing about the Unaffordable Care Act is that we expats don't have to buy insurance that wouldn't cover us in the foreign countries we live in anyway. So our problem as expats is that we'll have to prove to the IRS and the U.S. government that, one, we either have residency status in a foreign country, two, we remain outside of the U.S. for more than 330 days a year, or three, we make a low enough income so that we don't have to file a tax form at all. Those are the main avenues in which we can get our Unaffordable Care exemptions. Note, there are a few more ways too, but I won't go into that right now. You must know that all this Obamacare crap is no small thing, since there are more than 10 million U.S. citizens living outside the country right now, which means all of them are going to have to deal with the Unaffordable Care Act at one time or another. Now, speaking of the IRS and filing tax forms as an expat, the fact is there are so many retired expats in Latin America, 90% of whom are in Mexico, and you know I feel for you guys. Anyway, because there are so many people receiving pensions and getting Social Security, that means very few of them fall under that condition where their income is so low they don't have to file income tax forms at all. Because remember, the average Social Security recipient these days gets around $1,400 or $1,500 a month, about $17,000 or $18,000 a year. That means most expats abroad are filing income tax forms at least once a year. And, like in the States, 95% of those folks use a tax preparer to file that stuff. Which begs the question, how do you find a qualified tax preparer or CPA when you're living out of the country? Good question. Well, if you're living in an expat community, like so many retired gringos do in Mexico, or in those high-volume tourist areas like Costa Rica or Panama, there are plenty of people that actually advertise in the gringo newspapers as qualified tax experts. But are they? Well, usually through the expat grapevine, people have no trouble finding these guys either. And in these big expat-gated communities, oftentimes you'll have a retired tax preparer or CPA living the expat life himself who does that kind of work on the side. There's a chance a guy like that's living right down the street from you. But like I said, you'll generally only find those kind of guys in gringo-saturated areas. Now, as you know, I always recommend living off the gringo tourist trail. Believe me, I've tried it both ways, and off the tourist trail is the way to go. It's just so much more fun, much more laid back, inexpensive, and not to mention, you've got that gringo advantage going for you in full force, unlike in those gringo-saturated tourist areas. And of course, you knew that already, right? In fact, there's dozens of advantages to living off the tourist trail, with only a few slight disadvantages. Like, for example, brand new expats off the tourist trail often say the biggest disadvantage is that people don't speak English. So naturally, you're always fumbling around with even the communication basics. And at first, that's how most of us expats feel. But after a while, you realize it's a huge advantage. Because you've been thrown into the deep end, you can't help but learn your Spanish in a hurry. It's kind of like an absolutely free Spanish immersion program without having to live with an immersion family, eating their food and getting sick in their bathroom. Oh, and one more thing about immersion families. I've never heard of one yet that did not instruct you to put your used toilet paper in the bathroom trash can. And that's, of course, because the average Latin's house has undersized plumbing and will not take toilet paper in the toilet. Not in normal quantities anyway. So you'll have to get used to that. However, you won't get used to that. You never will. And here's my suggestion. Put it in the damn toilet anyway. In fact, anywhere they tell you to put your used toilet paper in the trash can, whether you're in an airport or a hotel or a restaurant or an immersion family home, go ahead and shove it in the toilet anyway. And if it clogs up the toilet, tough crap, pun intended. It's your Buddha-given right, since you're paying money for that place, to stick it in the toilet. I mean, come on, what the hell do they call it toilet paper for? They don't call it trash can paper, do they? But again, I digress. Oh, and by the way, if you ever do the immersion family thing, you'll find it's no fun at all getting sick in that shared bathroom. I mean, getting sick's no fun wherever you are, but like Expat Eddie always says, there's nothing like being in the comfort of your own house and your own private bathroom when you're about to lose your cookies. That's one thing Eddie's an expert on. And now I'm going to bring up a pretty much unspoken disadvantage to living off the tourist trail. And that is, it can be quite a chore to find a reliable tax expert to help you file those dreaded IRS forms and stuff. And of course, that's because there are so few gringos around, compared to the high-volume tourist areas, that is. Though, I assure you that even in the most far-off and isolated places in Latin America, even way out in the boonies, there's always a gringo or two within a couple of miles from where you've set up camp. And the locals, well, they always know where the gringos are because we stick out like a sore thumb. So, for example, if you're in a far-out little town and you walk into a hardware store or a restaurant, if you were to ask someone who is working there if there are any gringos living in the area, though there might only be a handful of us within a 10-mile radius, because there's so few of us, we're kind of like B-grade celebrities. You knew that already, right? It's part of the gringo advantage, and all the locals know we exist and whereabouts we live. And don't think that's a bad thing. It's not at all. Unless, of course, you're a jerk and treat people like crap. Then it's a different story. Always remember that to the locals, we're kind of first-world emissaries. So if you want to maintain your gringo advantage, you have to treat the people right. Though, when you talk about disadvantages, us gringos have a knack of turning those into opportunities. And that's why there's a kind of a golden opportunity that exists for all you expat wannabes and gonna-bes up north who are accountants, CPAs, or tax preparers. That is, if you're thinking about making money while you're down here. Because I mean it when I'm telling you that there's a huge dearth of qualified tax preparers when you're off the tourist trail. Let me repeat that. When you're off the gringo tourist trail. And about 95% of the landmass of Latin America is off the tourist trail. As opposed to when you're on the gringo tourist trail. There's just so many gringos that all the careers are represented, including accountants, CPAs, bookkeepers, and tax preparers. So anyway, being off the tourist trail almost all the time myself, when U.S. tax time comes around, people always ask my advice about who they should get, because they just can't find someone themselves locally. Now, of course, you could go online and get a tax preparer or get H&R Block to do it for you online too, but listen to this carefully now. Expat gringos who are tax preparers down here are very tuned in to the needs of expats because, well, they're expats themselves, right? As opposed to tax preparers up in the States and the big one-size-fits-all places like H&R Block. The tax filings and tax status of expats, permanent or otherwise, is not at all in the same league as the average Joe who files his taxes up in the States. And tax preparers who live up in the States are not generally familiar or very well-versed at all with the ins and outs of expats and their exemptions, deductions, exclusions, foreign bank accounts and SA corporations and offshore businesses, foreign-based partnerships and trusts. All of that. The fact is, CPAs and tax preparers up north in the States just don't have expat clients living outside the country. So it's not their specialty. Not to mention, all the expats I know that file taxes would like to sit down face to face with the preparer that's responsible for doing their taxes. Because most expats keep a low profile, they don't want all their financial data being shoved back and forth over the internet to a place like H&R Block or other tax preparers up in the States. And that's why I'm telling all you expat gonna-bes and wannabes, CPAs, accountants, and tax preparers, you'll always have plenty of work if you want it off the tourist trail down here in Latin America. And it's true. Like one expat tax preparer told me, when he first got down, he had no idea he was going to be in the tax preparing business for gringos and expats, but soon enough he had more clients than he could handle. And he also mentioned that early on, he had to do a lot of his own homework and boning up on the tax situation for expats and part-time expats. Because when he was back up in the States, he too only did taxes for the average Joe. But like he said, within a month or two, he became an expat tax expert. Okay, it's time we change to a less boring topic. Let's talk about the latest and the greatest coming from Expat Eddie. Now, if you recall, a couple of shows ago, I mentioned that Expat Eddie bought a used Jeep that just happened to be bulletproof to a level 3 or 4, I can't remember. And by the way, they call that blindado down here. Blindado. Bulletproof. Now, of course, he didn't care about the bulletproofing part. He just bought the car because it seemed to be a good deal. So anyway, over the last few months, I've taken a few rides with him in that thing. And it was nice and it drove well enough. However, it seemed every once in a while, I could detect a strange whiff of something really stale, almost like urine. And when I mentioned it to Eddie, he said, yeah, I know. It comes and goes and I've got three of those air freshener things hanging, and still I can't seem to get rid of the smell. Eddie said, but you know, I do let some of my workers take the car down to the big market and pick up produce. And for a while I thought maybe a potato or tomato slipped under the seat and just started rotting there. But I had my maintenance guy give it the works and nope, no rotten fruit. So anyway, about 2 weeks later, I hooked up with Eddie again, and this time he had no little air fresheners hanging from the mirror, and the car had no evil smell to it at all anymore. In fact, it smelled pretty fresh. So I said, Eddie, apparently you found out what was stinking the car up. And he laughed out loud, and he said, you'll never guess what it was. First, he said, I thought maybe one of my employees that drove the car was sabotaging me. You know, after finding no rotten fruit, I thought one of my workers might have taken a leak on the backseat floor or something. Because you never really know when someone's mad at the boss. And I said, Eddie, come on, it's not like you to make enemies. Your people love you. He said, yeah, but you never know. Then Eddie reminded me how he got back at one of his bosses in the States, a guy Eddie says was a real jerk, by shoving a raw potato in his car's exhaust pipe. And with that, his old boss just could not get the car started. It would crank all right, but it just wouldn't turn over. In the end, the guy had to have it towed to the garage, and it cost him about $300 for a repair. And with that, Eddie laughed even harder because he said, look, his mechanic ripped him off too. There was no repair work to be done. He just found the potato eventually and pulled it out and charged the guy $300 for a tune-up. Anyway, Eddie knows what it's like when workers try to get revenge on their bosses. So that did cross his mind. But it wasn't that. No, it wasn't that at all. Turns out, one day after Eddie had pretty much given up on eliminating that smell completely, he was stopped at a red light. He heard what sounded like a small bird fluttering its wings somewhere up in his headliner. You know, the ceiling of the car, above your head. And he thought, my God, there's a bird trapped in there. So when he got back home, he had his maintenance guy go for that headliner and try to get that bird out. And all the while, Eddie was thinking, how the hell did that thing get in there? Well, after about an hour, Eddie gets a knock at his front door, and there's his maintenance man with a big happy grin on his face, holding a dead rat by the tail. Not a mouse, a rat. Though, like Eddie said, it was a small rat. Disgusting enough, right? So then, his maintenance man said he was going to put a rat trap in the front seat of the car, and Eddie said, what for? You got him. Case closed. But the maintenance guy shook his head and said, uh-uh, they never live alone. They always come in pairs. So the guy rigged up your standard Three Stooges-style rat trap and loaded the trigger point with peanut butter. Now, the maintenance guy said rats and mice love peanut butter. So the next morning, Eddie got up, opened the front door, and no rat in the trap, but the peanut butter was gone. Meanwhile, the maintenance guy looked at the empty trap and said, smart rats you got here. Then he went into his lunch bag and pulled out a little piece of tortilla and reloaded that trap with that little piece of tortilla glued to the trigger point with, guess what? Peanut butter. And sure enough, the next morning, another rat in the trap. Case closed, right? Wrong. Just for good measure, the maintenance guy loaded up the trap again. And the next morning, another rat. And in fact, all week long, there were rats. A grand total of, get this, 8 rats were living in Eddie's headliner, which does bring up quite a few questions. First, how in the hell did they get in the car in the first place? Secondly, how in the hell did they find their way into the headliner of all places? And thirdly, what kind of damage were they doing up there? Well, his maintenance guy pulled the headliner, and as you might expect, there were a lot of harnesses and cables up there, including, yes, a rat's nest. And a good number of those electrical wires had the insulation gnawed right off of them. So in fact, the nest was pretty colorful because those wires are all color-coded. So what happened next? Well, surprise, surprise, Eddie's got the car for sale. But not because he wants to. It's just fine with him because it's rat-free now. It's a 3-year-old Jeep in otherwise very good condition. But Eddie's girlfriend, because of that rat problem, will not set foot in that car anymore for love or money. So Eddie, being Eddie, said he'd sell it to me cheap. Well, the fact is, I don't need an extra car, not even a cheap one. So next week it goes up on the bulletin boards and the auto classifieds in the big El Salvador newspaper. So will Eddie let prospective buyers in on the former rat problem? Well, Eddie says it's a hell of a nice car. Nothing ratty about it at all.
South of the border, down Mexico way.
You've been listening to the Expat Files, living in Latin America, coming to you twice a week from somewhere south of the border. Email me, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And don't forget to check out expatwisdom.com to sign up for your free reports on Latin America. See you next time. Nos vemos.
She was a picture.